This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
Welcome to podcast 50 from Football Dania, talking all Dutch football. Thank you very much to our ever-growing audience on YouTube, SoundCloud and iTunes for your support. We hope to treat you today to a brilliant podcast as usual. I'm Michael Statham and I'm joined by James Rowe, as well as special guest Paul Thomas Clay, who's a commentator on all sorts of European football in Norway, including, of course, the Dutch Eredivisie, which is on the menu today, as well as a preview of Ajax's Champions League quarter-final with Juventus. If you enjoyed today's special 50th podcast, give us a like and subscribe if you're new. Enjoy. Paul, James, thanks for joining me. Now, the first thing we need to talk about is the biggest news. It's just happened. Vitesse 3, PSV 3. What a game. It also opens up the Eredivisie title race so that Ajax now sit top of the table, which they don't do very often. They haven't done the last three years at all. They have not sat top after a match week for a long, long time. But Paul, I must ask you first about the actual game itself. You were commentating in Norway for Vitesse 3, PSV 3. What did you make of the game?
Oh, it was a crazy game, back and forth. My feeling was that Vitesse was the better team, actually. Maybe because I expect more from PSV. I don't think they come close to their top level in this game or last weekend against Ajax. I really think this might be Ajax's season. I felt that after the game in Amsterdam. I think they're good enough to draw with the Vitesse. I wasn't impressed by Van Bommel's tactics or substitutions or anything. They're too dependent on individuals to get results nowadays.
That's very true, and I think we've seen recently PSV's tactical decisions, or should I say Mark Van Bommel's decisions, especially with the midfield. He tends to go with an inexperienced midfield trio, Sadilek also been coming in a lot recently. But, you know, did that sort of tell today with those decisions that, I mean, they scored two penalties, and after the match, Leonard Slutsky was not happy at all with the refereeing decisions from Gusebiuk, and was Slutsky right to be so aggrieved with those penalty decisions?
Not the penalties awarded to PSV, no, but they should have had one of their own just before half-time. The high boots. I really don't understand why they didn't give that penalty, because it's a clear penalty. You can't have the boot 2 meters above ground and that not being a dangerous play. I really thought that was a penalty for Vitesse just before halftime. And that would have probably changed the dynamics of the game going into halftime with a 2-1 lead.
And just speaking about the midfield there, today Hendricks, Pereiro and Rosario made a midfield trio a bit more experienced, and I think it's a midfield trio that a lot of PSV fans want to see. James, do you think that Mark Van Bommel gave him some of the pressure today to play that more experienced midfield, and we can see that it didn't work? They again dropped points and probably didn't look at their best at all today.
No, well, I saw in the post-match that Van Bommel stated that he felt PSV did enough to win, and Slutsky was citing that the referee was very egotistical in his decisions. And I think the way they've played this season, it's cost a lot of energy for the players, and also this is Van Bommel's debut season as the main manager of PSV, and he's obviously trying different things, and he has very much a lot of belief in young players to give them an opportunity. But there's 5 games remaining now. Ajax are top on goal difference, and this is where people start to study the running of potential fixtures and what's coming up. And the two that jump out for me for PSV are the away days they have in Alkmaar and in Tilburg against Willem II. I think those could yet be decisive. But I think I stated on a pod before, you know, we know ourselves from following this Eredivisie for many, many years, that it generally always seems to go down to the last day. And I can't see this year being any different. I think, obviously, a good result for Vitesse today to hold PSV, because I know that Ajax fans were looking at it being a potential banana skin for PSV. But with five games to go, there's many a twist and turn ahead, and I still think they will go to the final day.
Paul, you're probably going to get a chance to watch more of PSV and Ajax this season, seeing as you're commentating a lot on the Eredivisie. Do you think now that this is Ajax's to lose? You think it's going to be their season? But in my opinion, I feel that Ajax might have a bit too much going on with the Champions League going, the quarterfinal awaits, the cup final awaits. Is the league, I mean, I'm sure the league is somewhat of a priority, but do these distractions not help that? And can that still mean that PSV will win the title because of these other competitions that Ajax will be concentrating on?
A double-edged sword. It gives energy to succeed in different competitions, so they have a lot of interesting games to look to when they prepare for the last leg of the season. I think the cup final doesn't matter, because that's in a weekend when there's no league play anyway, so that doesn't steal any energy or focus from them. The Juventus games might steal some focus, but I think it gives more energy than it drains out of them. So I think this will be Ajax's season. I think they'll take the title now. But it's bit too early to be 100% sure, but it seems to me like the team spirit in Ajax is very good these days. You see the pictures from the training ground. They hug each other, they play, they seem at ease with the situation.
I stated we had our predictions on a pod just before the season began, and Mike thought that PSV would win it, and I said that Ajax would win it, and I'm sticking to it right to the end. I think the Champions League in Europe, particularly having seen them in the qualifying rounds against the likes of Sturm Graz, to come so far to get through the group they did, and to dispatch of the three-time winners in their own stadium in the manner from which they did will give them a lot of confidence. But the league is the priority. You know, should Ajax not win the Eredivisie this season, it'll be 5 years. And yes, it's very nice to have a great young youth academy players coming through, looking at potential transfers to gain a lot of money. But, you know, this is the biggest club in the country, and they want to close the gap, in the words of Overmars, to the European counterparts, not to the Real Madrid's, Bayern Munich's or Juventus, but that second tier, if you like. They want to close the gap to be involved in that in the coming years. But I think for them, the title is the priority. I said right at the start of the season that they would do it, and I stick by that.
Okay. Well, we touched upon Ajax against Juventus there. Let's talk a bit more about that. That's one of the big fixtures coming up for Dutch football. And Ajax do take on Juventus in the Champions League quarter-final. One of the questions that we had is from our regular questioners, Abdul, and he wants to know if Ajax are going all the way to the final. Is it possible? I think all three of us can agree that it would be very difficult for Ajax, but anything can happen. If you can get past Juventus, then who knows? And you just need that little bit of luck in the Champions League, don't you, to get anywhere. Let's preview the match. What do we think? Do Ajax have a chance? And if so, how will they have that chance? Paul, you seem to watch a lot of Juventus. You commented a lot on Serie A. What can you tell us about Juventus? What are their strengths and perhaps their weaknesses? What can Ajax exploit?
There are a lot of things that Ajax can exploit, obviously, because they have got an aging defence. To look at the age of Bonucci and Chiellini. They are very experienced, of course, and that counts in Juve's favour, but I think there's a way to work around those two And I like the approach that Ten Hag's done lately with Tadic as a false number nine. That can be a key to getting around those two in the middle of Juve's defense. Because using Dolberg or Huntelaar, I don't think that will work at all. But a false number nine and they work around those two in the middle. They have two people on the side, Alexandro most probably on the left and João Cancelo on the right. There's room behind those two for Neres and Ziyech to exploit. There's a lot of ways to punch hole in the Juve defense. Then again, they are very experienced at this level. They've been this far in the tournament many, many times, and they've been to the finals a couple of times in the recent years. So they, I think that would counter Juve's. I think that will count for Juve in this games. Ronaldo will probably return for the for game two. Probably won't play the first game in Amsterdam. And we also saw how he turned around the fixture against Atletico Madrid. They lost 2-0 away, but they hammered one of the best defensive teams in Europe 3-0 in Turin.
I think this match in the first leg is going to be a 2-2 draw. I think that Ajax are full of confidence after the way upon which they saw after three times consecutive winners in Real Madrid in their own stadium. But for me, I think what makes me think that these ties will be completely different is, in some cases, speaking to a few Ajax fans and general media, they seem to think over here it's not Ajax against Juventus, it's Ajax against Ronaldo. And for example, when Ronaldo was injured on international duty, the talk of the town was, oh, he might not play the first leg. But for me, the biggest difference between Real Madrid and Juventus is that Ajax are now facing a master tactician in Max Allegri. You saw when they beat Tottenham in the Champions League last season, he made two substitutions and the game turned on its head. And he has the capability to do that at any time during the next 180 minutes. And I think Ajax will be full of confidence upon which the way they're playing domestically and the home crowd have played a key role in the in their European adventure so far this season. Even the pre-qualifying rounds, it was really a great atmosphere that was made in the group stage against Benfica and Bayern Munich as well, and of course Real Madrid. And I just think that I don't think Ajax will lose in Amsterdam against Juventus, but I think with the second leg being in Turin and with the capability of Max Allegri, and as Paul quite rightly points out, they got to the final in 2017. You know, this is for Juventus the holy grail now. This is what they want. They could be champions of Serie A very, very shortly, having had a period of dominance after such a long time of climbing back up through the divisions. But the one they want is the Holy Grail. And I do believe Ajax have a chance, but I just think with the, not just in terms of the player personnel, but I just think that in a tactical sense, you know, Solari wasn't able to react to what Ajax were doing in the Bernabeu. And I think Max Allegri will be able to react, whether Ajax put pressure on at home in Amsterdam or even in Turin. And I think that's going to be the difference. I think that will be the difference. But I will say, as you quite rightly point out, Michael, you know, luck can play a big part in the Champions League. I do think that Juventus will go through over two legs. But I also think that should Ajax put in yet another tremendous performance, especially away from home, I do think that the winner of this this two-legged affair will go on to be in the Champions League final.
It's a great point you make about Allegri, actually, because he's a master of counterplay. I've tried to figure out his starting 11 for the upcoming game, but even though I've studied all his starting 11s over the last few years, he always seems to throw you a curveball in front of these important games. I really don't know which 11 he will pick and which formation. And to solve the Tadic situation that I mentioned earlier, he can just make Emre Can or Sami Khedira drop deep and counter that thing from Ajax, I think. So a master of counterplay, master tactician, and I think he's probably the single most important component in Juve's quest for the Champions League trophy.
I'm just thinking back to the time when Ajax reached the Europa League final. This is a different Ajax team to the one that was then. I think this Ajax team now is better than the one that reached the Europa League final. However, there are similarities. Ajax are playing with a lot of energy. They're very quick. They're obviously playing the Ajax way. And I'm just thinking to when Ajax played Manchester United in the Europa League final, and Jose Mourinho was a very good tactical display there. From him to quell the threats of Ajax and really play quite defensive, and it nullified the threats of Ajax. I just wonder if Allegri will use something similar here with Juventus, not sitting back, but using those same sort of techniques to break down that space in between the lines, which Ajax like to use. I think personally that David Neres will be really key to this match. He's been on fine form recently for Ajax, on the left wing, and if Juventus can find a way to stopping him, then that will stop a lot of the balls coming into the box and also a lot of the energy of the team, because I think he carries a lot of the threat for Ajax at the moment.
Yeah, it's a good point. Counterplay is Allegri's probably foremost strength in a way. He doesn't play football to entertain or anything like that. He plays to win, and that's he'll do anything to win. He's very good at analyzing opponents and making the right tactical decisions at the right time during games. So I also think that Juventus will go through, but there is a chance for Ajax if they can make things work for them to their advantage, of course.
Yeah, I think that it's hard to, I mean, James has already given a prediction of 2-2. I think it's very hard to call this match, and I myself can't give a prediction. I think it's very difficult to do so, and it just depends how well Juventus can really deal with Ajax. Just a final question to preview this match. We've been asked via Twitter about the battle between De Ligt and Ronaldo, and we've seen before that De Ligt, I think only a year after his senior debut for Ajax, how well he dealt with Cristiano Ronaldo on international duty for the Netherlands. Can we see an even better performance from De Ligt when the two sides meet? Or do you think that Ronaldo's out for revenge and perhaps remembers that poor night he had for Portugal?
One of the key factors for that match, and although it might sound churlish what I'm about to say, but I do believe it to be true. That match was held in a neutral setting. That match was not played in Portugal or in the Netherlands. It was played in Switzerland, and I think that added to the surreal atmosphere of that international friendly. I wonder how seriously it was taken. It was a great performance by De Ligt, and I think it will stand him in good stead. But you know, De Ligt at the age of 19 is already writing history here in the way he conducts himself and the way he led his team to victory in the Bernabeu and you know, captained in every sense of the word that victory. And at the age of 19 is a key component in their title push. I think what Juventus would be wise to do, you know, scouting properly, because I know Barca is heavily linked with De Ligt, but he's not off the bottle. He's not, "I'm going to go to Barcelona because my mate's just gone to Barcelona." He will go exactly where he wants to go. And for him personally, a potential move to the Serie A or even La Liga with Real Madrid would be, in my opinion, a great move. But I think he'll take a lot of heart from what happened in that international game that you rightly point out, Michael. But I think Ronaldo as well, with his professionalism, will give a little bit more back. And I just think that De Ligt will remain the same. You know, I've watched him play on numerous occasions this season domestically and also in Europe. and he relishes every game. I don't think he'll be looking at, oh, it's I'm up against Ronaldo again. He'll just keep his professionalism at such a young age, and it's a joy to see, really, and it's wonderful that such a young captain who's come through the famous academy is playing such a vital role for Ajax defensively, but also in leadership terms.
If anything, the international game would work to Ronaldo's advantage in the sense that he doesn't like to lose. He hates to lose more than anyone in the football world, I think. If he's reminded of that, he'll put in the extra effort to really beat De Ligt in every situation. But De Ligt is so impressive. Yes, I think he can stop him, but still, it's Ronaldo we're talking about. You saw what he did against Atletico Madrid after the awful first game, and having played Atletico Madrid many times, he's a beast when you see him play like that. I think the key to stopping Ronaldo isn't in the duels just directly with him, it's to cutting off the supply lines for Ronaldo, to make him play with his back against the goal, and to take out the speed of his involvements, so he doesn't run towards goal, but he runs the wrong way in a way, if you know what I mean.
True. Good start to the podcast, and there's plenty more to come on this podcast, including talking about the likes of Ajax Den Haag, Feyenoord, some more about the Eredivisie itself, Netherlands women, plenty more to come. Now, I would just like to ask you to one more question about Ajax and PSV before we move on. And it's a question sent in on Twitter by Total Randota. And he says, who do you think will suffer more from the summer departures, Ajax or PSV?
Depends how many players Ajax lose. I think Ajax would have to do a bigger rebuilding job after the summer. I see quite a few players leaving, but then again, a few of those in the starting 11, of course, staying. But they probably lose three or four players. I think Ajax will be hurt the most, but they are a master of rebuilding teams in Amsterdam.
Yeah, I agree. I think with the departure of De Jong and the potential departure of Ziyech and Tagliafico and possibly De Ligt, I think that will hurt them more, and it is a bigger rebuilding job. I think with PSV already investing in their youth products and their youth personnel more recently in this season than previous years, which is a good thing for them because it's been long overdue, I think that it will be a bigger rebuilding job for Ajax. But it'll be interesting to see who comes and goes. I know that a lot of people are linking lots of players with a move, but you know, there's lots of facets to transfers, you know, in terms of players being happy and potential moves and coming off foot. There'll be many, many changes. It's also a summer without a major tournament, so maybe deals will be done early. But to answer the question, I think it will be Ajax.
Personally, I think that we'll see PSV suffer the most. I think that Ajax will make more money from the players that leave, in addition to their Champions League money, meaning that they can recover a lot easier. We've already seen that they've made the third most expensive signing in their history. Yeah, they a little while ago, Ajax came out saying, you know, we can't afford these big players anymore, but now we've seen that they can, and they can probably beat their old transfer record very soon if they can continue to collect all this money from the players that they're developing. However, with PSV, you're looking at some of the players may go. Lozano, for example, is being looked at all season from bigger clubs. But I don't see too many of them leaving. Perhaps Julian Zutz will eventually move on, but he's ageing a little now, and I wonder if he still commands the same fee as he used to be able to. Whereas also PSV, I think you'll see Dumfries stay. Bergwijn might even stay another year. And it's just what PSV do with the money that they receive, whether they strengthen a bit like Ajax and actually get some more senior players in. For example, a Tadic that can really make a big impact in the Eredivisie. or if they just reinvest their money into their youth and rely upon the likes of Rosario, Sadilek to step up a little and make a great impact next season. Gakpo, another player as well that could do that. I think this just brings us on nicely to the next question we received from Gareth, and he says, with Onana signing a new deal at Ajax, do you think that might make some of the players linked with moves away want to stay for a little while longer? And I don't think that just goes for Ajax. I think that could go for PSV and Feyenoord as well, that some of the bigger players might actually just think about staying at the club for a little bit longer and enjoying the European experiences that Ajax can enjoy.
Not just that, Michael, as well, but we've seen the likes of, for example, how Depay got on at Manchester United, and that all that glitters is not always gold. And the most important thing for players is to be able to play. For example, Silicon moving from Ajax to Barcelona and playing really Copa del Rey matches and Champions League dead rubbers and that kind of thing. You know, it's not always conducive to the development of a playing career, and especially for the young Dutch players as well. It's important to be able to play. You know, I remember, to give you an example, I remember speaking to John Verhoek, who signed for Rennes from here in the Netherlands. He signed for Rennes a couple of years ago, and he told me about the time he had his first training session and the pace of the training session alone. He thought to himself, this is frenetic and it's just a training session. So I can understand the and he even told me that in hindsight he shouldn't really have gone, but obviously the move come about and he wanted to take his opportunity. But I think we've reached a stage now where players are a lot more thoughtful about the moves they make, and I think that can only be a good thing, because particularly for the young players, it's about playing regularly as possible to develop and get even better in your career. It's no good for young players to be leaving and end up on a bench and hardly play and be loaned out somewhere. And there's lots of different cases of that. So, as you rightly point out, players may well stay, and that can only be a good thing. And we'll also see the league improve slightly more as well. And we all know it's an acquired taste, the Eredivisie, but it has an awful lot to offer. But I agree. I think players staying can only end up long term to be a good thing.
Well, let's move on from talking about Ajax and PSV now, and let's have a little chat about Feyenoord. So we had a question from Justin, and he wants to know, you know, are Feyenoord happy being the third biggest team in the Eredivisie?
I would say they're not. I mean, I think they're relieved with their title win for the first time in 18 years, and recently, you know, not too long ago. And I think they wanted to consolidate and push on, but you know, there's so much going on behind the scenes with the development of a new stadium, which is going to regenerate an entire area of Rotterdam. And obviously with the news of Van Bronckhorst leaving to be replaced by Jaap Stam, who only basically turned up at Zwolle not so long ago and took over the reins there, having had a stint at Reading in England. And then all of a sudden you're manager of Feyenoord. You know, there's lots of changes coming up. There's obviously Robin van Persie is also retiring. The technical director, Martin van Gaal, is also leaving. And there's lots of changes afoot, not just on the pitch, but off it as well for the club. It's going to be a very, very busy summer for them. And I hope that they can reinvest any money they receive and help their youth teams to get even better. You know, it's not so long ago they moved into a new training complex, which is tremendous for them, and it looks fantastic. And you hope they would see the benefits of it. But it's going to be a really busy summer for Feyenoord. Of course, they're not happy being third, and with an 18-point gap between them and PSV and Ajax is a bit too much for them. You know, the equivalent of six matches alone. And a very, very busy summer awaits Jaap Stam and Feyenoord, both on and off the pitch, in my opinion.
I think, you know, you can see at the minute in the Eredivisie table that it's not even comfortable for them being the third biggest team in the Eredivisie. Well, size-wise, yes, third, but position-wise, I was there pushing them very hard for third position. And, Paul, you've probably seen Feyenoord a bit this season. And what have you made of their play, and what do you think needs to change at that club?
It's a complex situation for them. I think really to sort of build a new team in a way. They're not a top team in any not in not at the back, not in the defense, not in the midfield, not in the attack. I think they just they're the third team in the Eredivisie in every sense of the word, and with the players leaving and with the problems that you talked about, James, it's a really big rebuilding job, and I don't think they will be in the top two positions next year. I think it will take at least two seasons before they're in the top two positions.
Yeah, they've been a tough watch as well, and some of the players really need to leave that club. Unfortunately for them, though, that some of their best players, they're not very young either, and that just means that the value will decrease, meaning they can't make the money that Ajax and PSV can.
And I think a lot of their best players, like Tony Villena, for example, he should have left 2 years ago. I think he stayed on too long. There's the changes they've been through the last few seasons. The new signings haven't really lived up to expectations. So they have a really big job ahead.
If I can just add about Tony Filena, he had the opportunity to join Sampdoria a couple of seasons ago, but he turned it down due to personal reasons. I think it was because he wanted to stay with family here in the Netherlands. But I think Paul makes a great point. It'd be good for him to push on his career and look for a move abroad to another country to improve even further. And it'd be interesting to see what clubs might well be interested in him in the summer.
Yeah, that's right. A good player, but not a great player. And I think, again, that's the problem that Feyenoord have. They don't have many great players of that elevated level that can really make a difference. I think on this topic of being one of the big teams in the division, we had a question from El de Pigeon. And he says, congratulations, guys, for the 50th podcast. He wants us to keep going. And he wants to know a bit more about Arda Den Haag. He says, you know, The Hague is the third biggest city in the whole of the Netherlands. It's rich, it's prestigious, and historically, though, it's got such a poor football club, he says, compared to Ajax, PSV and Feyenoord. And he thinks it's nonsense. James, what do you think about this? The Hague is a big city in the Netherlands, so why has the club not received a good history?
Well, first and foremost, I think it's a great question. I think it's always good to have questions of this ilk on the pod, so congratulations on a great question. I'm more than happy to answer it. First and foremost, Ardo is a people's club. It's a special people's club that has always had its moments in terms of even playing in Europe in the 80s. You know, and I can understand the point that the Twitter follower makes, but you've got to remember as well, the stadium is only 15,000. You compare that to the Kelp of... you know, and you compare that to the Jan Cruyff Arena, the capacities are a lot larger. And also as well, Ardo haven't really helped themselves with the managers upon which they've chosen in recent years in terms of marquee managers to help push that up just a little bit more. They tried Ferdinand Advocaat on many, many different occasions. And many occasions, everybody thought he was going to take it. And the last time they were playing some tremendous stuff was under Maurice Steyn. And that came to an abrupt end. You know, I can understand the point about how it hasn't really pushed on, but the dynamics of the club don't really allow for that. I mean, they was in with the Chinese owners that they have, you know, and wanted to push on. But given the way and the dynamics of the club, it's not really conducive. But you never know in the future in terms of, you know, a marquee manager. You know, to give an example, you know, Vitesse went for Slutsky, which nobody thought he would accept the job, and he did. And to give an example, you know, about being ambitious in trying to attract a bigger name and a bigger manager to push on. You know, this is a club with history, and you know, this is a club who you know, they've won two Eredivisie titles. They've only won the Dutch Cup twice. You know, the last time was in the 70s, I think 1975, and. Yeah, I can understand the question, but as I say, to the short of that question is the dynamics of the club are completely different in terms of the two other biggest cities in the country in terms of Amsterdam and Rotterdam. But yeah, who knows? They could well surprise us all and make waves in the coming seasons.
I think Arda Den Haag in The Hague, it sort of draws comparisons to me to England. You know, you've got your big clubs in London, Chelsea, Arsenal, all that sort of thing. And then in Manchester, you've got City, United. And then in Birmingham, you've got, of course, I mean, I'm an Aston Villa fan, a big, big club in Birmingham. But you've also got Birmingham City and, of course, Aston Villa's main rivals. And they have won next to nothing in their entire history. Obviously, as an Aston Villa fan, that makes you very happy. However, you think about Arda Den Haag and their relatively modest history, but the same goes to Birmingham. And I think if I drew a comparison to Birmingham, maybe because of just the way the history's gone, the way the funding's gone, money's a big factor in football, isn't it? And I think that may well have seen what's happened there.
No, I fully agree, Michael. And money is also a big factor here. We saw with the known fact of the bookkeeping here in the Netherlands for the clubs is supervised by the Dutch FA, the Carver Bay, where your books have to always be in order. Otherwise, you're threatened with financial sanctions, with points deduction, and if you don't heed any potential warnings, you're threatened with relegation. If I can just make a point on your club, in my opinion, you support one of the biggest clubs in England. I'm not just saying it because we do a podcast together, but Aston Villa are a massive club, and you should be very proud of them.
I definitely am. We've had another question from Cam as we edge towards the end of our podcast. We've got plenty more questions to go. And he would like to know what our favourite Eredivisie moments has been this year. Now, Paul and James, I hope you've had a little rack of your brains for this one. If not, I'll give you a chance to have a little think. Because I think I might have mine. Even though I haven't gone through every single Eredivisie moment, I did find myself enjoying that Ajax-PSV game the other day. What a match that was, high quality. Perhaps PSV didn't give their 100% in that game, but I did particularly enjoy that moment when Neres was tripped and the VAR, which has been very prominent in the Eredivisie this season, gave the penalty and Tadic buried it to reignite the title race, and the whole of Amsterdam just erupted in that moment. And, you know, I'm not an Ajax fan, but I thought that was a particularly exciting moment just for the Eredivisie, really. It's good to see that we've got some really good players back in the Dutch league, and it's making it really high quality and exciting again.
Well, I can go first. I've got two moments or two games that I'd like to talk about. It's the game that you talked about, the topper from last weekend, and the Klassieker in the end of January, the 6-2 game. It was one of the craziest games I've ever done. With the opening, with a Schöne free kick and the turnaround from Feyenoord, it was something else. I was lost for words commentating that game. Actually, Ajax were good for the first 8 minutes, and then when all went pear-shaped for them.
For the 8-0 victory for Ajax over the Graafschap. It was the biggest win I've ever seen at Ajax at home in all the years I've been here attending matches, so I thought that was quite a nice moment, you know, to go to a game, you go to matches not thinking that you're going to go and witness an 8-0, but it turned out to be that way. And I'd also give a special mention to FC Emmen, who are in their debut season and in the top flight here in the Netherlands, and they're fighting extremely hard to stay up, and under Dick Lukien they've done a tremendous job. But I think the moment for me is when everyone actually sat up and took notice of them when they drew at home to PSV, and it might have only been a draw, and you could say, oh, it's just a draw, but upon the manner upon which they did it, I believe they were also 2-0 down, and they managed to fight back against PSV at home and gain that draw, and that point for them could be the difference between potential relegation playoffs and staying up automatically in the Eredivisie. And I think, considering how hard the whole club has worked, and in particular the manager and Dick Lukien, who I've spoken to managers who played under him before, and also when he was an assistant at Veendam and Groningen, he's got such tremendous motivational skills, and you can see that now. A tremendous result for Emmen today as well, at home to Heerlen Veen. And it's these types of results that will hopefully keep them up. You've got to remember as well, for such a small club with, I think, a stadium of just over 5,000 people, you know, your debut season in the top flight of the professional football in that country, and they are holding their own and doing themselves proud.
Yeah, really nice moments from both of you there. I think it's really encapsulated a really exciting season for the Eredivisie, and long may it continue. We must plough on, and the next question comes from Tota Ramdata, second question in this podcast, and he wants to know where Memphis Depay will be next season. So slightly unrelated to the Eredivisie there, but where do we think Memphis will be next season? There has been a link to Liverpool this week.
I do quite a few French games as well. I've done Lyon quite a few times this season and the past 10 seasons actually, but I don't think any top shelf clubs would want Memphis Depay actually, because he's not consistent enough. As someone said on Twitter after the Barcelona games, he missed his big club audition in that game. So I don't think Liverpool will be the team for him, and I don't think Jurgen Klopp would want him.
No, really, really, really good comment there on Memphis. And I think, if anything, the top shelf clubs will come in for Memphis based on his Dutch national team form, where he's been brilliant and he's been relied upon in the striker's role. Perhaps there's a future for him in that kind of position. You can kind of see why Liverpool might be after him, that kind of pacey forward that will belong in that front three. But yeah, agree, he's not consistent enough at club level at all. And his attitude has made a difference at his time with Lyon. James, if I could ask you a next question. Cam has another question. He wants to know what the timeline is on Carol Eiting's Ajax return. He's been injured for quite a lot, hasn't he? And is he likely to come back this season, or is he just going to have to start again fresh next season?
I think given the running and what's at stake and the fact they hold him in such high regard, I wouldn't be surprised if they pull out all the stops to have him back and ready and to make a big impression next season. He has been involved in squads, he has made substitute appearances and been on the subs bench, but I think they hold him in such high regard that with the five games to go, and the pressure at domestic level to become champion for the first time in five seasons, I think we'll see more of him next season. I don't just think it'll be in the sense that he's back from injury, fit and ready to play. I think he himself knows as well. He's got to give a little bit of gas and really fight hard. And I think we'll be talking about him a lot more next season.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if Frank Dion moves on, you know, you've got Marion, but also Carol Eiting's playing that deeper midfield role. Next question comes from Vada, and he wants to know if the Ajax-Barcelona cooperation thing is real, and if so, how will it impact Ajax?
Well, one thing I must say about this is that when Marc Overmars was questioned, he said, you know, we don't want to give our players away to Barcelona. You know, we want to close the gap between the kind of second tier in Europe and Ajax, you know, improving even more. And I think because of the historical link, I think people make far too much of a bigger deal of it. You know, yes, you had in the very, very early days the likes of Linus Michels and Jan Cruyff going to Barcelona and changing the whole DNA of this club. And I think people, especially here in the Netherlands, they cherish the link so much that they expect that almost every single player will go there. But the club isn't always conducive to a particular player going there. To give you an example, De Jong has chosen to go there. Now, you see links all the time about De Ligt also going to Barcelona, but you don't go to a club just because your mate is also going to the same club. It doesn't really work like that. And I just think that far too much is made of the link in a romantic sense. You know, it's healthy for players to look at other clubs. It's healthy for players to go to Germany or to England or to France and have a look around before making that step up. You know, Barcelona have spent a tremendous amount of money on De Jong, and I wish him all the best in Barcelona. But you've got to remember, going away to De Graafschap, going away to Venlo, and going away to Aden Den Haag is completely different when you go away to the likes of San Sebastian, Valencia and Sevilla. The whole atmosphere, the whole game, the whole pressure, environment, everything. So I think far too much is played of the link, and I think Overmars quietly quelled the fact is if Ajax is kind of like a serving club, which they're not, they're a huge club in their own right. I think Overmars was extremely professional in the way upon which he worded the answer, where he said, you know, we're not going to give our players away for a cheap price. You know, it's about ensuring the future of the club for Ajax and making sure their players make the right decision and that the health of the club is observed at all times.
I completely agree, and I also read the statements from Overmars, and I was happy to see him do that actually, because Ajax are a big club in their own right, like you said, and they should be a development club or a sort of a academy for Barcelona or anyone. They are a big club in their own right, and they've beaten Real Madrid in the Champions League this season, and that shows you the format in a way. They're at that level when they do things right. So I completely agree. They should be a farmer club, or what do you call it as they call it in American sports, like they have in the hockey world, and
good answers, guys. And the final question this week comes from Chris, and he says, do you think the Netherlands' ladies' results in the Algarve Cup will carry over to the World Cup, or will we see the team that won the Euros? James, you and I have met some of these players, you mainly. But then, you know, how do you think they'll be looking forward to this World Cup? And is there a good chance? Now, I know we've kind of answered this before a little bit, talking about the chances of the Netherlands winning at the World Cup. But now we're getting so close. Do we think these results in the Algarve Cup will carry over to the competition?
No, because I think they realise, and just to give Chris a heads up, he can read the interviews with the majority of the squad, mainly the entire midfield, on footballandyou.com, and of what's gone before when I interviewed the players. I think a good sign is that they had a friendly against Mexico, which they won 2-0 a couple of days ago actually, and they play Chile upcoming, and it's good for them to play different nations. One thing that strikes me is, yes, the Algarve Cup in the defeat to Spain and Poland was difficult, but they all, when I spoke to the majority of them, they all spoke about how pleased they were to write history by winning the Euros in 2017, and how they realised that this World Cup is a fantastic opportunity. And it's going to be difficult for them, but I think they know this, in terms of the World Cup, is the only opportunity they may well get, in terms of the nucleus of the group that they have. And I think they've got to be up there with the favourites to win the competition. You know, the reigning European champions and a good nucleus of players. I think that the captaincy changing as well. I think Sari van Veenendaal is now the captain, is the goalkeeper. But there's still some very, very good players in that squad. You know, Desiree van Lunteren van Freiburg and Dekker and Spitzer and Van der Donk of Arsenal. You know, there's excellent players there, and a real good nucleus. So they should, I think they realise this is an opportunity that won't come round very often, and hopefully under the guidance of Riechmann, they will be able to take it with both hands.
Great. Well, Paul, James, thank you very much for joining me in this podcast. And I think the comment from Jordan that I sent in via Twitter says it all. He says, congratulations on reaching 50 podcasts. Here's to 100. Cheers, James. Cheers, Jordan. And I think we'll look forward to doing plenty more in future. Paul, hopefully you can join us again in future. And James, as usual, thank you for joining me.
You're more than welcome. If I could just say as well, a very big well done to yourself and to Mike. You know, we started out on this podcast road a couple of years ago now, and I remember the first one being almost 2 hours. Do you remember? And I just think all three of us bring something different to the table in terms of tactics and knowledge, and it's a real team effort. So I just wanted to say a big well done from my part to you and to Mike in that respect, in us all reaching 50 podcasts.
Yeah, congrats on the 50th, and raise my glasses for 100.
Okay, thanks, guys. Yeah, I think listeners can look forward to plenty more in the future. We've got another podcast coming in the next couple of weeks. I think we'll be reviewing Ajax Juventus, a lot more of the Eredivisie. There's plenty more to come. There's also plenty more to come in June. There's the Women's World Cup. There's also the Nations League semi-final and, fingers crossed, final. Yes, plenty more to get excited about, and we'll be releasing some much more content soon. So keep tuned on YouTube, SoundCloud, and of course the website for more content soon. That is classic.